Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Parshat Yitro. Rabbi Israel is a faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Director of Continuing Education. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. Hello, everybody. We are going to discuss this week Parshat Yitro, which is a tremendously exciting parasha. We're talking about the giving of the Ten Commandments, the Ma'amad Har Sinai, the revelation at Sinai, incredible events. However, what I would like to discuss this week is actually something which precedes all of that, and maybe you might even seem somewhat insignificant. It is the arrival of Moshe's father-in-law, the arrival of Yitro, Jethro. And it says the following at the beginning of our parsha. Jethro, priest of Midian, Moshe's father-in-law, Vayishma Yitro, Kohen Midian, Chotei Moshe, et kol asher asa Elohim l'Moshe l'Yisrael amo, ki otzi Hashem et Yisrael m'Mitzrayim. Jethro heard all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. And Yitro comes along with actually Moshe's wife and children, who had been apparently not with him during the exodus from Egypt, and comes to the Israelite camp. When he comes, Moshe actually tells him in detail. Moshe then recounted to his father-in-law everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptian for Israel's sake, all the hardships that had befallen them on the way and how the Lord had delivered them. Vayichad Yitro al kol ha-tova she'asa Hashem li-Yisrael she'hetzilo mi'ad Mitzrayim. This is quite interesting. It says, Yitro rejoiced. He rejoiced over all the kindness and that the Lord had shown Israel when he delivered them from Egypt. And he responds with a blessing. Blessed be the Lord, Yitro said, who delivered you from the Egyptians and from Pharaoh, who delivered the people from under the hands of Egypt. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods by the result of their schemes against the people. And Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, brings a burnt offering, sacrifices to God. This story is fascinating. Yitro had already heard about Yitziat Mitzrayim. It says that in the opening verse. However, he comes along, he knew about Yitziat Mitzrayim, but when he's actually told the stories, he's told the inside story by Moshe about, maybe about the crossing of the Red Sea and the crisis they felt there, the sense of, the near-death experience. He suddenly has a new revelation, and Vayichad Yitro, he rejoices. He has an emotional experience. Rashi talks about possibly Vayichad could be translated. He gets goosebumps. He has an emotional reaction, and he ends up with a blessing, crying out in blessing, and brings sacrifices to God. Yitro is a very interesting personality who immediately comes and seems overwhelmed by the goodness of Hashem and expresses this very, very in special ways. The story continues that the next day, Vayimi Mocharat, so it says, and Moshe sat down to judge the people. And here is the famous episode in which Yitro sees Moshe judging the people. It seems like there's a huge, very, very long line of people waiting for Moshe, a huge workload, and sees all of this. And he says, look, this is not fair for the people. It's not fair for you. And the result of this is that Yitro gives a piece of advice to set up a judiciary, a whole set of courts. We talk about Sarei Alafim, Sarei Meot, Sarei Chamishim, Sarei Asarot, princes of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties and of tens, and everybody has a recourse to justice where they can settle their disputes and their problems, first in groups of ten, and then in groups of 50, and then in hundreds, and even in thousands, and the most difficult things are brought to Moshe. And indeed, Vayishma Moshe l'kol chotno, Moses listens to his father-in-law's advice. Yitro conditions this on God's acquiescence, even though we don't really hear that. And this is the way things happen, and Moses now takes the most difficult cases. So Yitro is quite a personality. It begins with a expression of appreciation, of thanks, of, I'd say, a sense of amazement at God's power in freeing the Jewish people. And the story ends with Yitro offering some hugely important advice, which changes the way that the people gain access to law, to advice, whereby Moshe is not overwhelmed by the workload of tending to his flock, and the people get recourse to the justice that they need. The story ends in verse 27 with Vayishalach Moshe et cholno ve'yelech lo el artzo. The Yitro goes home. Now, we're going to examine the fabric of this story through a very interesting dispute of the commentators. The commentators want to know, when did this story happen? When did it happen? And here starts a huge machloket, a huge argument between Rashi, the Ibn Ezra, and the Ramban, the famous medieval commentators. Maybe we'll start with the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra insists that this story actually takes place at a later point. It takes place, it's out of place. The chapter 18, this whole chapter which deals with Yitro, shouldn't be here. It should be at a later stage after the building of the tabernacle, some 6 months later. Why? Why does he say this? So there are actually a few reasons for this. I'll give three of them. In chapter 18, verse 12, we get told that the sacrifices which Yitro brings are eaten by Aaron b'chol zikne Yisrael echol lechem michotei Moshe lifnei Elokim. That Aaron and all the elders of Israel eat bread when Yitro brings his sacrifice before God. And what does it mean to eat before God? Usually that is a reference to the Mishkan, to the tabernacle, to the presence of the Aaron, the Ark of the Covenant. But there is no Ark of the Covenant at this point. Ibn Ezra says, well, you see, if they're eating before God, that clearly means that there is a focal presence of God. That must mean the Mishkan already stands. That's point one. Argument number two that Ibn Ezra uses is the fact that there is clearly a sense of judging. We're judging the people, and it talks about the Chukei HaElokim ve'et Torotav, the laws of God and his teachings. What laws of God and teachings are there before the giving of the Torah? Hence, this story must be after the giving of the Torah. A third argument, a third arrow in the Ibn Ezra's quiver, is the fact that Yitro goes home at the end of this story. Could it possibly be that Yitro would be here just a few days before Matan Torah and he would not stay? Why would he not stay for the experience of Matan Torah? Why would he not stay for the experience of the revelation at Mount Sinai, if he's been so impressed by God? Yitro goes home. And the funny thing then is that if you look later on in Bamidbar, in the book of Numbers, chapter 10, he reappears. There we see that Yitro is back in the camp, and Moshe is pleading with him to come to Israel with them, but Yitro refuses, and he's not interested, and it seems like he goes back to his native land. Moses said to him, please don't leave us. But he turns around and says, no, I've got to go back to my family, and I don't want to stay with you. The Ibn Ezra says, could it possibly be that Yitro came before the giving of the Torah, went home for Matan Torah, and then a year later returned back? That seems a little absurd, especially when we have Vayishalach Moshe et chotno ve'yelech lo el haaretz. So he went back to his land. Ibn Ezra, for all of these reasons, wants to claim that Yitro, actually the whole event, is afterwards. It comes at a later stage, it comes at a later stage in the story, and that is how we're to understand it. A further support for the Ibn Ezra, I should say, is that it's clear that they are encamped at this point at Har HaElokim, at the mountain of God at Mount Sinai. However, they only travel there in chapter 19. If that is true, then why would Yitro be meeting them when they are already encamped at Mount Sinai? Again, Ibn Ezra says, well, this took place after the giving of the Torah, after the establishment of the tabernacle, and this is a later story which is placed here earlier. Of course, the question we're going to ask according to the Ibn Ezra is, why would you take this story and put it out of place? But we will discuss that in due course. The second approach is that of the Ramban, Nachmanides. And Nachmanides argues very simply that this story is in place. Nachmanides says that this story all takes place. Well, you know what, let me take a step back. Sometimes people are familiar with Rashi's principle, Ein Mukdam Umuchar BaTorah. Rashi holds that the Torah is not in chronological order. The Torah is not a history book, but the Torah is sometimes alters the chronological order of things to teach some other lesson. That is Rashi's opinion. However, the Ramban, Nachmanides, generally does not side with this opinion. And as much as possible, the Ramban wants to suggest that the Torah is written in a chronological order. Of course, everybody has to agree that the Torah is broadly chronological. It begins with creation, moves through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the Exodus, and ends up with the 40 years in the wilderness, finishing with the 40th year and Moses' death. The broad framework is clearly chronological. The question is whether the details, whether all of the items are necessarily placed in historical order. The Ramban, Nachmanides, insists that they are. And as much as possible, he says the Torah follows a order which is historical, chronological, and therefore, in last week's parasha, we watched Bnei Yisrael cross the Red Sea. They receive the water, the man, Moshe hits the rock, Amalek attack, and next, Yitro arrives. If you're going to ask me, he says, but they haven't yet got to Har HaElokim, they haven't yet got to the mountain of God. He explains that's not a problem. Maybe Moshe came out the camp to meet him there, and then brought him back to the camp. And the Ramban insists that this story actually is in place before Matan Torah. Oh, but later on we see Yitro after Matan Torah, he says, not a problem. Yitro arrived at the camp, he left, and then he came back a year later. What's the problem, says the Ramban? Why would he leave for Matan Torah? Who knows? The only problem which the Ramban has to deal with is what was the law that Moshe was teaching? When it talks about the laws of God here, it uses Chukei HaElokim Ve Torah Tav. The law, Chok is a law. So what exactly are they talking about here? And therefore, the Ramban actually comes to a fascinating, fascinating reading here. This is what he says. Moshe talks about how the people come and seek God for me. Okay? He says to him, you know, what are you doing here all day? And Moshe says, Ki yavo elai ha'am lidrosh ha'elokim. The people come to seek God. So what is this? So if I can read in translation from the Ramban, Nachmanides, he says the following. This is the consultation. How do they seek God? And here I quote from the Ramban. To pray for their sick. To find out the fate of items that they've lost. For this is the meaning of the phrase, to seek God. And this is true of all the prophets. And he quotes Shmuel, the book of Shmuel, where, if you remember the story, King Saul, before he is king, has lost two donkeys. And he doesn't know where they are. And he actually goes to speak to the prophet to find out where his donkeys are. Or, for example, Rivka. Right, Rivka, Isaac's wife, Rebecca, she had problems with her pregnancy. It says, Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. She went to seek God. What does it mean to seek God? She had medical difficulties. She had a difficult pregnancy. She clearly wanted the children to be okay. And therefore, she went to seek God. She went to make sure that things would be okay by looking for a prophet. This is what people were asking from Moshe. And this is what was instituted here. This is, by the way, quite fascinating, because the Ramban is suggesting that Moshe wasn't necessarily doling out legal rulings, but rather helping people, almost like an advisor, a psychologist, a counselor of sorts, somebody who was coming to advise people in their daily life, and not necessarily actually a jurist. This wasn't necessarily a legal recourse to settling disputes. And this is where the Ramban goes on this. The Ramban says that the entire story is before Matan Torah, and this is indeed a visit by a Kohen Midian, a priest of Midian, who shows his conversion to Judaism, shows his realization of the true God, etc. By the way, the most complicated of all is Rashi. We frequently see Rashi as simple, but Rashi is far from simple. Rashi's opinion is the most complex. Rashi divides chapter 18 into two. There is the first section, Yitro's arrival, and there is the second section, which is the judges and Yitro's advice. For Rashi, the first section of the parasha occurred at this point, after the war of Amalek and before Matan Torah. However, the second section, that of the judges and Yitro's advice, occurs after Matan Torah, on the day after Yom Kippur, the day that Moshe came down with the second tablets and received forgiveness for the people. By the way, Rashi's explanation that this is after Moses came down with the second tablets explains why there would be such a phenomenal number of people in Moshe's waiting room. If you look at the chronology of what happened after the golden calf, Moshe has actually been out of the camp for about 3 months, and there would have been a huge number of quibbles and disagreements, and therefore Moshe had a lot to deal with when he came back. So Rashi agrees with the Ramban in the first parasha, that it follows the chronology and history of the book. However, with the second, he says, no, this is not true. And he says, of course, Moshe couldn't be judging God's laws if there wasn't a law, and therefore we have to displace the second story till afterwards. By the way, according to Rashi, Yitro was in the camp for Matan Torah. Yitro did experience Matan Torah with the nation of Israel. Now, the question is, explanation of Rashi is hugely difficult. Why would you split a parsha into two? What is going on here? Why would the Torah tell us half the story and not even indicate that there was a dissonance between each half of the story? So we'll have to investigate this. I'm going to try and attack Rashi's displacement of the story into two, and also the Ibn Ezra taking the story out. I see the Ramban is fine. The Ramban has everything in order and everything's organized. But according to Ibn Ezra and Rashi, where they're claiming that things are out of historical place, why do that? And I'd like to give some sort of explanation for this. So one thought that comes to mind is the following. We've already seen the first half of the Parsha, the story of Yitro's arrival. And it's very, very human. Yitro hears. It begins with Vayishma Yitro. He hears. The reports of the Exodus make a deep impression on his consciousness. He's moved by it, and that leads him to visit the Israelite camp. He rejoices on the account of the salvation. He blesses God. It's incredibly human. I'd say the second bit as well. He simply, the next day, when Moshe is sitting judging the people, it says, Vayarchote Moshe. He sees what's going on. He simply observes and asks a simple question. Why are you standing here? There are so many people. When Moshe explains, he says, you know, you're going to wear yourself out, and it's not good for the people. And now he comes up with a very logical system. Everything here is rational, sometimes emotional, but very, very human. I'm going to claim that this is the key to the correct understanding of the Parsha. It is a direct contrast to the events of Mount Sinai. When Yitro suggests a new way of organizing the system of the judges, the initiative is his, it's human, it's not God's. He suggests judges who are ordinary citizens. And the aim here is for individuals to have maximum access to Torah. Now, this shouldn't be belittled or minimized. This is an enormous contrast to the awesome revelation of God that we see later in the parasha. According to Matan Torah, the truth is in the heavens. The truth is with God, who is overwhelming and overpowering. And Moses at Mount Sinai is the only individual who gains access to the divine message. There is no individual access at Mount Sinai. The people are held back with a fence, but that is not true here. Here, Yitro comes to his own realization. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. He comes to his own realization through hearing and listening. He didn't experience Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but he undergoes through a process of intellectual and emotional searching. Through the information that he hears, he understands God's power. Chazal discussed this very interestingly. The Medrash Tanchuma, for example, says, why is his name Yitro? And they say it's from the word Yoter, Yeter, that he added a parsha to the Torah. Yitro instigated, he initiated, he came up with his own idea, and that later got written into the law. In other words, usually we see the law as coming from God. But here we have a situation where Yitro comes up with his own instinctive idea, and that's written into our book of law, the Torah. Yitro is interesting because Chazal describe him as a restless religious searcher. The Mechilta in Yitro says that there wasn't a god that Yitro hadn't served. That Yitro made a deal with Moshe, his son-in-law, that when he has grandchildren, his grandchild should be allowed to be an independent searcher, a dependent seeker, looking for whatever God made sense to him. Yitro is described as an intellectual who is constantly searching and seeking for a God, and by the way, seemingly comes to his destination here by understanding that Hashem is the true God. But it's interesting that Yitro, the Kohen Midian, I don't know what he was a Kohen, a priest too, but if he was a priest to Midian, suddenly he's recognizing Hashem. What is going on here? The sense is that Yitro is always on the search, he's on the lookout. By the way, even earlier in the story, when Moshe meets Yitro's daughter, which is clearly what brings him close to him, it says, Vayol Moshe lashevet et ha'ish, that Moshe wanted to live with this man. It's almost like he was attracted to his daughter, but he found a true attraction also to his father-in-law. They had something in common. They both were seeking God. Now, what I want to claim here is something quite amazing. You know, maybe let's pose probably the most basic question of this parsha of Yitro. Yitro comes along and he sees Moshe judging the people, and there's a huge line, And he says to Moshe, you're going to get worn out. Appoints a staggered system whereby people can all gain access to the law by appointing judges of tens and fifties and hundreds and thousands, etc. Did Deuteronomy just come up with this idea? Couldn't Moshe have come up with the idea? It's basic logic. Delegation. Delegate the workload. Who needs to do this? Why do we need an outsider to come and do this? Could it be that Moshe and Am Yisrael, because anyone from the people could have suggested it, were unable to raise the concept of the appointment of the judges? It was beyond them. Why? Because they knew that they had to stand before Moses, who was the prophet of God. They were overwhelmed by the power of prophecy, by the power of revelation. They thought they were paralyzed by it. They thought that they couldn't come up with their own independent ideas. In the world in which Moses, the great man who last week split the Red Sea, how can we, and Moses is standing there, how can we suggest our own ideas? Yitro is the man who has the confidence to stand up and say that we don't need to be paralyzed by Torah. It is the Torah of the heavens, but we have to seek and find Torah within ourselves. We have to look in the human soul, we have to hear and think and come up with our own ideas. Yitro's message is, Lo bashamayim, the Torah is not in the heavens. What I'm going to claim is that Yitro is an incredible balance to Ma'amad Har Sinai, to the revelation at Sinai. At the end of our parsha, we have the revelation at Sinai with its overwhelming spectacles and power of God. But at the beginning of the parsha, we have somebody who reaches God through his own initiative. We have somebody who adds laws to the Torah through his own thinking. Now think about it. Now, I think this goes to explain the Ibn Ezra. For the Ibn Ezra, this parsha doesn't belong here. So why put it here? Why put it here for a very simple reason? It's pashut. It's clear and simple. We have a real danger that even in a world of revelation, we lose any independence, any independent movement and thought. That we will stand by Sinai and we will think that everything is still up on that mountain and that we cannot practice any individual response, any individual action. Even before we have stood at the foot of Mount Sinai, the Torah tells us the story of Yitro. It tells the story of a man who reaches God by his own thinking, even though he never experienced it. It teaches us that there is a man who can come up with ideas which contribute to Judaism and contribute to the Jewish people. In other words, before we hear about the amazing spectacle of Har Sinai, the incredible revelation that took there, the Torah is warning us, don't let the Torah paralyze you, still retain your individuality. You have to seek the truth from Torah, but at the same time you have to respond with the huge power of yourself. And maybe this is even more powerful according to Rashi. Rashi says that Yitro comes, again, as we said, with all his hearing and listening and human response, before Mount Sinai, before he heard the law. He then experienced the law along with Bnei Yisrael. And yet, by healing Machorat, the next day, he wasn't affected detrimentally from the experience. He was inspired, for sure. He also pledged his allegiance, Na'aseh v'nishma. He also said he would listen and he would do what God said. And yet, the next day, when he sees a problem, he knows how to use his own mind in order to suggest new avenues, new techniques, in order to resolve them. Yitro, according to Rashi, is the same person who values his own intellect, his own individuality, his own emotions, his own initiative, before Har Sinai and after Har Sinai, even though he stood alongside Bnei Yisrael at the foot of Mount Sinai. And that is a vital lesson for us to learn, that alongside the very necessary experience that we have of God and the fact that we are his people and he gave us the Torah, we must never let it eclipse totally. We must let it affect. It guides. But we must never let it eclipse and blacken the sense of ourselves, because that would not be the right thing to do. Hence, maybe we can explain why, according to the Ramban, everything is in order. Everything follows a chronological historical pattern. But according to Ibn Ezra and Rashi, why would the parasha be out of order? This is a very simple explanation that I'm giving. I'm trying to say that we must be inspired, charged with energy by Hashem, but we must always remember that the human mind and the human emotion is a most powerful tool in the world of truth and in service of God, which may not be paralyzed by the power of revelation. Shavuot Tov and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so send an email to podcasts at pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.